This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning.
There's no Sunday morning better than a fall Sunday morning.
Agreed.
In Missoula, Montana. Leaves are changing. Grizz football is going on. All
it's
the other
crisp.
Sports, you know, baseball's in the playoffs.
Football.
Football is NFL, college football, NBA starting up October 6th.
Yes.
You know, with exhibition games and regular season games. Everything's going on. Fall is the best time
of year. I
agree
with you.
You know, leading into the holidays, the only thing I don't like about fall is that 45 days before Halloween, you got all that candy corn in the stores and all the masks, and pretty soon all the turkey stuff. It used to be a couple of weeks before, but now it's moved to like 2 months before. You have to have pumpkins on your front step or you're not in tune with what's going on.
That's right. Yeah. Well, hey, and don't forget, Starbucks, they every year, Halloween, pumpkin spice comes earlier and earlier in the year.
I just saw pumpkin spice dog biscuits.
Dog biscuits?
You think they know the difference?
No.
No. How could a dog know the difference? But they got them for us. That's who they're selling to. Well, us, obviously.
But you used to teach at the university.
Yes.
So this is the return to school when they're now fully in full swing,
right,
at the university.
By the way, the university had the best fall enrollment in 15 years.
Fantastic.
It's fantastic. You know, and for a lot of reasons. You know, a good president, good plan, you know, streamlining the program, better marketing, better image, all that kind of stuff makes a difference.
It really goes a long way.
So I'm happy with that. So who are we talking to today?
So today our guest is Kevin Head. And many of you people in our audience will know Kevin as the owner or co-owner or owner of the
Rhino. He's owned it in the last 4 years. Yeah, since 2021, he's owned it all himself.
Right.
He's exclusively the Rhino empresario.
He is, and I love the Rhino. It's one of my favorite bars in town, and I take all of my out-of-town guests there when they're in town, and they love it. Well, but Kevin's got a great story. He's also a benevolent fundraiser for the university.
Right.
And he's very involved in the creative writing program. We're going to talk to him about his initiatives there, but we're also going to talk to Kevin because he's a first-time guest for us.
Yes.
I mean,
so
I've known him for years.
All the gruesome details.
Exactly. What brought him here? Why? How did he get here? I know one thing, a little tidbit, okay?
Yes.
He's from back east.
Well, I also know another little tidbit.
Okay.
He was a wildlife biology major who...
What?
Yes, 35 plus years ago, and decided working in a booze industry...
Emporium
was a better choice than wildlife biology, and I want to find out how he made that decision and whether he was sober when he made that decision.
I guarantee you he wasn't. No, I'm sure he was.
Yes.
Anyway, he's a great guy. He's a good friend. I've known him since I moved here, and I can't believe this is his first time on our show, so I'm excited for this.
I'm looking forward to it as well.
All right, back with Kevin Head after these words. All right, Arnie, we are back and joined in the studio by Kevin Head.
Kevin, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Hey, pleasure to be here. Good afternoon.
Yes.
Or morning.
Good morning. This is the air in the morning, so we'll say good morning.
Apologies.
Good morning, Kevin. That's all right.
Good morning.
Well, we're good. We're good on that.
What a lovely Sunday morning.
So, Kevin, everybody in our listening audience knows the Rhino.
That's great. Thank you.
But today, we want to find out about the man behind the Rhino.
Okay.
For openers.
Sure.
So tell us a little your backstory. We're always interested in the backstory. How'd you get to Missoula? You know, I'm assuming it's because of the University of Montana, but you can tell the story. And then how did you make the transition from that to the Rhino ownership?
Well, I was born in Ohio.
Where in Ohio?
Dayton.
Dayton, Ohio.
And about 4 weeks after I was born, our family moved to New York. So I grew up just north of New York City. My dad worked in advertising on Madison Avenue in New York, and he commuted every day. And then I came here in 1977 to go to school at the University of Montana. I studied wildlife biology. And But there was a lot of political stuff with that. And I should say that I minored in wildlife biology and I majored in partying,
which I don't
recommend to folks. But, you know, for me, it worked out with my chosen profession. So I came out here for that.
But wait a minute. Before you go too far, where are you living in right outside of Manhattan?
In Westchester County, just north of White Plains, New York.
Sure. Okay, so a commuter town.
It was a commuter train.
So
my
before you hit Rye, New York, you were somewhere.
We went past Rye.
Well, you're past Rye.
A little past Rye. But what made you take the leap to come to Montana? Like, that's not where all of your friends were going.
No, actually, all my friends wanted to go to Colorado. But I knew Montana had all the big critters, so I wanted to come out here because of that. I knew that there
were wildlife in Montana.
I did, and actually, my first summer out here, I was a work study student on the Border Grizzly Project, and I hiked around the Whitefish Divide and trapping bears.
Wait a minute. Wait a second.
Trapping bears.
I'm thinking of our guest that we had a couple of weeks ago, Rick Bass. Right. You know Rick Bass, right?
I haven't met Rick. I know who he is.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of similarities.
Did you actually trap a bear?
Well, actually, I was in on trapping. We had folks there that were working on their doctorates that would, you know, have the dart guns and we would sedate the animals and then take all the measurements and do all that kind of stuff.
But what was your friend group back in the Westchester County area? Were they deadheads? Like, what made them want to come out here? What was their lifestyle?
It was weird. Well, yeah, coming from Westchester County, I had a very big liberal chip on my shoulder, and I came out here and I wanted to be outside. I wanted to be out in the mountains. I always wanted to see the Rocky Mountains, never knowing that I would live in the middle of them. But when I got out here, a lot of my friends were from Glendive.
Okay.
And boy, did I see, a second opinion about a lot of things.
I'm sure.
And it was great. These are still very eye-opening. It's the old thing about, in New York, this social lady was asked about why Ronald Reagan won. And she goes, I have no idea. I don't know anybody who voted for him. And it's you're surrounded with people that you know. And when I came out here, I have lifelong friends from Glendive and all over the state. So
amazing.
The second opinions, it's been great. So
never look back.
I want to harken back to something you mentioned, which I want to drill down a little on. So your dad was on Madison Avenue at the time, like Mad Men.
Yes.
Was situated.
He was in the late 50s and through the 60s.
So what did you glean from him from his experiences then?
Well, my dad was just gone during the weekdays.
Right.
And every now and then we might see a commercial that he worked on TV.
On one of the four stations stations.
It's kind of fun because my dad, in the early 60s, he was helping with advertising for Dodge.
Right.
And I think it was 62 or 63, they came up with a new car, but they didn't have a name for it. So my dad came up with this name, and they said, no, we don't like it. He said, animal names? No, that's just a bad thing for
vehicles.
And so the name he came up with at that time was Mustang.
Right.
What? He did. Was
for
Mustang. It was, of course, Lee Iacocca a couple of years later ran with it, and boy, that and had the car to back it up.
Right.
So I mean, and that was a classic thing. But my dad worked for advertising for Reader's Digest and Phillips Petroleum and Phillips Products.
Right.
So there's a lot of different things that he
tobacco.
Worked on.
So did you watch Mad Men on TV?
Of course I did.
And did it harken back to some of the...
No, not really. These guys, I mean, my dad enjoyed... he had like normally two old fashions when he got home at night.
Right, wasn't it lunchtime?
And that was, no, but he did that. I mean, that's back in the days of the three martini lunches.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those things are, unless you're on vacation, those things are... That's a dead thing.
Right. Right.
I don't know anybody, you know, that does the three martini lunches anymore.
No.
No. So, you know, he was a World War II vet, fought in the Pacific, and to help him sleep at night, they recommended that he had a couple of those every night, and really saw my dad tanked.
Right, right.
You know, my uncles would visit, and they probably drank a little more than they normally do, but right. Otherwise...
From Ohio. So back to Montana. So you're partying more than you're enjoying studying.
Boy, was I.
And then how'd the Rhino come about?
Well, my business partner at the time, my friend, he had recommended us possibly going into the bar business because the brewery was the name of the bar that was there before.
Mm-hmm.
They were open from, I believe it was 1984 to 1987, and then they closed down. And then we opened, I think they closed in March. We opened in September.
Right.
And
that's a big leap, though.
I knew what people liked, and I knew what I liked. And I knew that we would be able to be successful with it and be able to have a party.
What did you do from the time you graduated college to the time you...
Well, I didn't actually graduate college. I was asked to leave.
Hey, you were partying a lot.
I was partying. I went back to school in 2012, and I actually got my degree in creative writing. But before that, I was working in the service industry. I worked at different pizza places. And while I managed the Southside Zimmerino's Red Pies mm-hmm. over Montana, the delivery place. And so that's what I was doing. But when I went back to school at the University of Montana, I had to go up to the registrar's office. Thankfully, a friend of mine who I knew worked there
right.
and helped it so I could come back in. But I was getting straight A's, but I was only taking one or two classes because I had a career at the bar.
At the bar.
So I was only taking one or two classes, but I was getting straight A's. But for the first few years, I was getting academic warnings because of my GPA from before.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't going above where it needed to go, but slowly but surely it was getting
like
up there.
Animal House, 0.0.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, Animal House, yeah, they were tame compared to us.
Uh-oh.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. What was going on?
No, those are things that we don't admit to anymore.
Right. This was what years, though? Let's just give us some
context. It was 77 to about 82, 83.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Those were good times.
Yeah, exactly.
Going to school.
That was partying times. I mean, when I was here for the last two Arbor Day keggers.
Uh-huh.
And boy, was that eye-opening.
Those are famous.
Yeah, they were. Totally. They were fun.
Who played? Do you remember what artist
played? Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. Heart. Well, not when I was
Heart.
There.
Heart, wow.
Well, not when I was there. Livewire Choir and Mission Mountain Wood Band.
Sure.
I forget who all else right now.
Everybody's always talked about trying to revive that.
Well, the thing is, at the time, it was okay, but and it was acceptable. I mean, back then, that was when there used to be senior keggers.
What was that?
Oh, well, so on campus. In high school. No, this was for high school graduates because it was 18 at the time.
Right.
And there were keggers at every high school for the graduating class.
Right.
Oh, that's long gone.
I love Montana.
And, of course, in the 1980s, Nancy Reagan wanted to just say no. And because of that,
And Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
And Mothers Against Drunk Driving. But Nancy Reagan made it so that... everybody had all the states had to go to 21 or they could lose their highway funds.
Right. So they went to 21 for a number of years before they changed. And
so it was 18. And so it was a different thing. But there was a backlash against it. And actually, I was kind of worried. We started the first Brewfest here in town in 1992. It was called the Garden City Brewfest, and it was spelled B-R-I-W. Right. And it was a misspelling because it was an acronym, and it stood for Bayern, the Rhino, Iron Horse, and Warden's Market. And we were all part of getting that started.
That's right.
And then it was given to the Downtown Association, and they've been running with it ever since.
Sure. And correctly spelling it Brewfest then.
B-R-E-W, yes.
B-R-E-W. Kevin, explain for our listening audience. So you're in the service industry. You moved here in the service industry, left school, right? Left school. But you knew that this was your passion. You knew that the service industry and ultimately owning a bar was something that appealed to you. But because I know a lot more about you than I think our audience does, but I'm looking right now at a single barrel series rare character bourbon that's right here in the studio. When did you start getting interested in doing your own kind of recipes?
Or being a connoisseur, because you also are a Scotch connoisseur.
Yeah, well, let me go back a little bit with
sure.
this. In the late 80s, in Missoula, but also in the Northwest, especially in Portland and Seattle, the microbreweries were really coming big.
Right, right.
And we embraced that in a big way. When we first opened, we had 3 beers on tap. Then we went from 3 to 5. Then we went from 5 to 10. Then 10 to 13 to 14. And finally said, to heck with this. And we ran with 50 beers on tap.
Amazing.
So when that was going on, then at the same a couple of years later, cigars started coming back in a huge way.
Right.
And we had a great humidor in the bar at the time. Unfortunately, it didn't keep the cigars as humid as we wanted it to, and our cigars were more expensive than anyone. It didn't quite work out for us. But while the cigars came on, then all of a sudden, single malt scotch really started coming back. In the 1980s, scotch in the United States died. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, later in the 90s, the micro distilleries really started coming on. And all of a sudden, though, the price of scotch just skyrocketed. It just got stupid, the
right.
pricing of scotch. I used to be able to buy a Macallan 25-year-old for $350. It's now close to
$3,000. Yeah.
And so it got crazy. So all of a sudden, everybody that I knew that was into scotch was looking at bourbon again. Bourbon had always been the American whiskey,
right.
But it was always kind of the redheaded stepchild or the
scotch.
The black sheep brother of the whiskey family compared to that. But then at the same time, bourbon really took a page out of the marketing book of scotch and started putting out limited editions, single barrels.
Van Winkle and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It started coming on strong with some incredible bourbons. And bourbon is huge in Montana and especially in Missoula.
Right.
So I met a friend of mine who's actually in town in a couple of days, who lived in New Jersey, and he was a whiskey buyer for a big store in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and he introduced me and took me down to Kentucky and introduced me to all these distillery guys.
What year is this? In the 90s?
Probably was about 2017, 2018.
Right, that's when it started taking off.
Okay, got it. Because you are one of the foremost experts on bourbon here in the Western states.
Plus a lot about scotch.
I've got friends who've forgotten. My buddy who's coming out to visit, he's forgotten more about whiskey than I know. And I think I know a little bit about
Have you done things at the Grotto with him?
No.
Charlie that did that?
I don't think so.
Okay, but anyway, keep going.
Let me interject here.
Sorry.
So yes. I was in Scotland in May.
Beautiful country. Reminds me a lot of Montana.
It does.
Except that it's it's a lot more water.
And lush. It's lush.
It's like the East Coast of the U.S.
And I was at the Balmoral Hotel in the capital, and they had 500 different scotches available.
That's,
and they weren't just telling you there are 500. They had 500 different. So the market, I mean, you had to get into that for a while in your business, and now you're switching to bourbon. And bourbon doesn't have 500, but they probably got a heck of a lot.
Oh, they
more.
Do.
They do?
Oh,
they're 500
gosh,
different bourbons?
There are so many bourbons out there right now, and there are all these there's always new stuff coming out. And the bottle that we have in the
– that we're looking at here.
Here is an example of – there's only 180 bottles of this right. in the world. And all right, it's like really what makes that unique? Well, the thing about whiskey is that a single barrel, a barrel is to whiskey like vintage is to wine.
Right.
Okay, so you can – fill two barrels on the same day from the same still in the same level of char wood. And after 5 years, this barrel might taste completely different than this one.
Right.
So right. then you ask also, so then why does Jack Daniel's always taste the same? Well, they have master tasters and blenders there that mix everything together so that there's always that consistency.
Right, consistent.
But there are thousands of these in the United States.
So as a proprietor running an establishment, trying to make sure your inventory matches your customer needs, how do you make those decisions about what to carry and what not to carry?
Well, a lot of the folks that come in trust me for trying to get the good stuff and having the good stuff. If I have something there that they taste and they don't like, then they may not be coming back in again.
Sure.
So I look all over the state. I go on trips to a bunch of different liquor stores. I try as much as I can to buy here in Missoula,
right.
But sometimes I can't find some of these and some of the whiskeys that I want. And the state may only get in a few cases of something, and it may go to some store like in Roundup or wherever, Weibo.
Or up in Big Fork in the big liquor store.
Or Big Fork, yes, of course. So I do trips around the state and go to a bunch of liquor stores and see if I can find some stuff. And I call up the liquor stores, too, to see if they'd hold me a bottle or two.
At the same time, you have to have something that's price sensitive because then everybody wants a $25 shot of bourbon.
No,
you're right.
So you
have to have good tasting, yes. You know, more reasonably priced stuff as well. Which
is definitely. And there's old granddad was a bourbon that, you know, didn't have the greatest rep, kind of like Old Crow or Ten High or something
even Four
like that.
Even Four Roses right. didn't.
Four Roses at one time was horrible.
Right.
It was horrible. But boy, that was one of the most sought after bourbons
exactly.
you can find. So old granddad has a bourbon out now called 114. It's 114 proof. It's, I think, $32, $34.
Right.
Best bang for the buck you can find in the state. And it's at a lot of different places. I don't know if it's at a lot of different bars, but you should be able to find it at a bunch of different liquor stores.
Sure.
And I highly recommend that.
That's a good tip for our listeners. They're worth listening to the show just to hear that.
For old granddad.
And
yeah,
the other one is there's a limited edition of Bullet 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a rye. And it's wonderful. It's not as big as, say, the bourbon that we have in front of us right here.
Right.
It's actually a little bit lighter, but it's got full flavor,
right.
And it's like a perfect summer sipping whiskey. And typically summer is not when a lot of people want to have whiskey.
Right.
So it's kind of cool that it really fits in that little niche.
One of the things that I've noticed lately, and maybe it's a trend that you've also seen in all your years working at the Rhino, is that more and more women are drinking bourbon-based drinks.
Oh, definitely. You know, we're in a golden age of spirits and food right now that a lot of people may not realize, but the American palate has changed. When I first came out here, I had the one beer that I drank, I had the one shot that I did, and the one cocktail,
right.
And that was it, and I was loyal to just those. I
right.
might change it after a few years and do something different, but that was it.
Right.
It's completely different now.
Mm-hmm.
People want to try everything, and I think the microbrewery
kind of was the predecessor to that.
That trend had to do with that. So people are looking at what's the new stuff, what's the seasonal stuff that's
what's
coming out.
What's the mixed drink? What's the cocktail that's
yes, this renaissance of the cocktail culture that my parents, your guys' parents, were really into, but we really didn't see that much growing up. Well, it's just with all the advent of the tasting rooms of the micro distilleries, it's huge right now.
What would you say is, like, with this bourbon we have in front of us, what's a good food pairing with something like that? Because I know that you also, you think about that. You think about the food and the bourbon.
I do. First off, this would be a perfect cigar bourbon.
Got it. Ah. That says a lot to me.
This would be a perfect cigar bourbon.
After dinner?
It's a little bit bigger. Yes, after dinner. You know, with this, maybe a pecan pie.
Ah, got it. Okay.
Or even, you know, say a beef stew.
A beef stew, something.
Party or, something like that. I think this would go well with. The thing about it, if you're going to add or have food with whiskeys and enjoy it that way, make sure that the food isn't too spicy because it will affect your palate.
Right. Right. It'll cover. Let's do a quick idea. Our guest is Kevin Head. He is the owner of the Rhino in downtown Missoula, but also an expert on all things bourbon and spirits. Kevin, you had been doing a lot of tastings at the Rhino. Are you still doing monthly or quarterly tastings?
I am. I was going to do one this month, but it kind of got past me. So I'm doing a big fundraiser tasting in October, but I may do another one in the Rhino in November.
Okay. And that's because that's how I've been introduced to a lot of bourbons, is through those tastings. Yeah. Cause that you hold. And there was, and now I know we're going to talk about Opus, but because Opus to me is like the penultimate tasting.
Thank you.
Right?
It is.
I mean, talk to us a little bit about, before we get into Opus, you got involved in the creative writing program when you went back to school, okay? Was writing always part of, and creative writing always part of your interest? Was it something that you were always interested in?
Always in the back of my mind. I didn't really do much of it, but I read a lot and I knew what I liked. And
what is that? What was the...
Oh,
what?
I kind of like adventure, spy versus spy, noir, that kind of stuff. But, I mean, Shogun, to me, what an amazing book that was. I think one of the first books I read when I was 12 or 13 was Dracula.
Right.
And The Lord of the Rings and, you know, those things and Dune.
Did you know Missoula's history with writers?
No, had no idea about it.
So this is all coincidental.
Yes, it is. I came out here for wildlife.
Yeah. Escape from New York and look where he ends up, and you've never left, right? You've never lived.
I fell in love with Missoula. You can't help it. Right. You just do. And
that's true.
We were saying in the introduction, people don't realize, but this fall is one of the best times of year here by far.
Oh, gorgeous.
Best time.
Today's a beautiful day.
Yes, perfect day.
We're lucky.
Perfect day.
So anyway, creative writing, what you liked, and then you got involved in the program. That's quite an endeavor. I mean, that's quite a undertaking, is to pursue a curriculum like that, because that's not easy.
Well, there was always kind of a hole in my soul that I had never graduated from the university. It bugged me that I'd gone and I was never able to finish up with a degree. And I don't recommend that for everybody. Not everybody has to do that. But just for me, I needed to go back to fill that hole that was there. And I'm really glad that I did, because some of my best friends and people that I know are people that are connected with it, with the creative writing program, some of the students that were there. And boy, there were just so many talented students. It was really cool to see.
Well, the other thing about going back to 2012 versus when you first started is adult education has changed a lot. There are a lot of people, not everybody's 20 years old or 19 years old that you're sitting in the classroom with.
Oh, right.
There are a lot of programs across the university here and everywhere where older people are going back to school to finish degrees or to take a different degree because their appetite is changing, what they're interested in.
Sure. Makes sense.
Oh, definitely. The non-traditional students. That's what I was. And it was funny because to all the other students, I was the oldest kid in the class, right. typically older than the professor, right. too. And it was funny because I was, for some folks, I was kind of the creepy old guy
right.
in class until they found out that I owned the Rhino, and then I was the cool creepy old
guy. Yeah, the cool creepy old guy. Exactly.
yeah.
Exactly.
We're and all creepy old guys.
And they still don't have a degree in partying, except that...
and you got that.
and you already had that.
Well, I didn't get the certificate, but I got the bumps and bruises
right.
and Zero. Scars.
So you've been at the Rhino, what, 30-plus years now?
So it's been, oh, gosh, last month was, or this month. Is 37 years.
Well, congratulations on 37 years. But
that is amazing.
It is, and one business. That's great. So, what are the things that stand out over those 37 years as sort of benchmark turning points, or you know, highs or lows? And as you look over 37 years, you know, what sticks out to you?
Well, I know at least for us, putting the 50 beers on tap put us mm-hmm. on the map.
Right.
Otherwise, in many ways, we were just another downtown bar, although we were a little bit different. We weren't a sports bar, though we showed sports. There were other things that we weren't, but we started a bunch of new things. So the multiple taps, we started pint nights.
Right.
That, and then a lot of other places started doing that. And on Thursday nights, and then when we did those, we would go through 200 glasses in a night. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. What was good. And, you know, now if we do it, we're lucky if we go through 24. But, you know, those, I would say that, The economic downturn in 2008 right. Had an effect, but Montana, compared to the rest of the
right.
the U.S.,
right.
is it really doesn't happen until about a year later.
Right.
And then we get effect. So it was 2009 that hit us.
And COVID hit you, obviously. Because
COVID was horrible. And actually, we're still feeling the effects of it because a lot of folks would drink at home. And they would, you know, see how much money they were spending, and the DUIs had a big thing sure. to do with it also.
Sure.
So right now the young people are a little bit more health conscious. I think that the dispensaries have definitely had an effect also.
Right. Sure.
But so the thing there that for me is that I have to always keep thinking of ways in which to reinvent things to make sure that we're
people
still
come
relevant.
In.
And one of the things that I think you guys might want to become involved with that I'm going to be working on this January and February is something called Sober But Social. And I'm going to be doing this with a few other bars and restaurants. And we're going to feature non-alcoholic beer,
right?
Mocktails,
right?
CBD seltzers, things like that for people that want to go out and socialize but don't necessarily want to drink.
Right. I'm a non-drinker.
And so one of the things I'm doing is I'm taking some of my staff down to Belgrade Liquor tomorrow.
Right.
They're going to be teaching us a whole bunch about mocktails right. and right. Things that are really hitting right now seeing.
Is there are there equivalents of bourbon and vodka?
There are non-alcoholic whiskeys.
I can't believe that.
I know. There are non-alcoholic vodkas. And when I heard that, I was
water.
Like, isn't that water?
Yeah, right. yeah,
it's
water.
But no, exactly. That's stuff that tastes like it,
like it,
but without the alcohol. So, I mean, if we can introduce some of that to get people into it. It used to be that our bread and butter was after 9 o'clock at night.
Right.
But young people, a lot of them, and thank God for the I'm out during that time, but the younger people were finding out or coming out a little bit earlier,
mm-hmm.
and then yeah. they're going home earlier. So it's a different world.
Right.
That
well, the other interesting thing is, you know, you talk about trying to be competitive, and your pricing is not unusual or out of the ordinary. But I think in general, for a lot of people, when they start going out and finding out that mixed drinks are $20 to $25, and someplace more. I was in a bar in New York, it's $30 a drink. People then have a general thing about backing away. I can buy a whole bottle for $30, one drink, and you know.
That's right.
While I like to socialize and I like to be in there, that's a heavy, heavy tab.
Not at the Rhino.
No, that's one of the good things about your
that, that is, although we do have some whiskeys that are very expensive.
But it's not your house brand.
No. I would say for our cocktails, we're usually anywhere from $4 to $8.
Yeah, I was in Vegas, and I was not drinking, and we were sitting in, you know, not the most expensive restaurant. It was in a bar in one of the hotels, and waiting to get called in for dinner. Two old fashions and a beer. With tax was $77.
Oh yeah,
that's a lot of money for three.
It is a lot of money,
but you drink fewer.
Then they put the big square ice cube in it. So you're only getting like an ounce or something.
So you're encountering that too, and there are ways around that with the mocktails and the non-alcoholic beer and the CBD infused beverages.
And also trying to be seltzers. Price sensitive on these things.
We are, and. We're trying to be sensitive to what people want also, not just, you know, living on our past laurels that we've garnered over the years. But, you know, for right now is what's relevant. So one of the things that we're doing is we're bringing in every now and then we're bringing in DJs.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Oh, yeah.
And it's made a big difference. Just when, if we leave the door open, people walking by hear that music and in they come.
Not just salty peanuts as a marketing strategy like they used to use.
Well, let's talk about. So, when I first was introduced to you, it was in the early, since when I moved here, you invited me to different tastings. But the one thing you did invite me to early on was Opus, the writer's Opus. And that's one of the things we want to talk about today. Talk a little bit about the impetus of the writer's opus. It really marries your two loves, creative writing and the work, your day job.
Well, I was sitting having cocktails with one of my professors, one of my close friends named Robert Stubblefield. I'm sure you've got listeners out there that have taken classes with him. He's just a great guy. And he was talking about there is a undergrad publication called The Oval. So undergrads, some of them will get their poems, very short stories, cartoons put into this publication. It comes out once a year. And he was talking about how the funding that he was getting for that from the university had been cut. And I said, well, why don't we I can put on something. And I can do a wine and whiskey tasting. And before that, I used to do something called the Connoisseur's Classic, which was the very super high-end, my highest-end stuff that I had. Mm-hmm. I said I could do that to a lesser degree. And it basically has taken over what we did for the Connoisseur's Classic, which was a fundraiser for child care resources here in town. And so we did that. The first one, I said, we'll do a short live auction, or a short live auction, very short, a silent auction. I'll bring as many of the live auction and silent auction items as I can, and I'll bring all the wine and all the whiskey, and it took off. I have people that come back into town just for this event. It's hands down the best bang for the buck.
It's amazing.
In Montana.
And why do you say that? Let's do the pitch for why it's the best
bang. All
right,
well, I'll give you an idea. One of the bottles that I'll have there, on the 18th of October, is a 25-year-old whistle pig. It goes for about $1,500 a bottle. So that's one out of probably 25 different bourbons and ryes that I'll have there. Basil Hayden, 13-year-old. Pappy Van Winkle, 10-year.
As part of the tasting.
All as part of the tasting. So you pay your $100 to come in.
Right.
Or $175 for a couple. And you get to taste everything. And we only pour about a quarter to a third of an ounce.
Right.
So if there's something you really like, you can come back for it. But it gives you a chance to try a lot of different things.
Right.
So that by the time you leave, you might have a little glow, but you're not lit.
Right. That's right.
So, and the same with wine. I pick out the wine all year long, and I find really good
things
that I like.
And who's catering this? Where is the food coming from?
The food is coming from River and Range, which is part of Pangea.
Oh, right. Fantastic.
That's a new business venture that they have, and we're going to be doing it in the governor's room. They're taking that over.
At the Florence Hotel.
At the Florence, and we'll have some fun stuff. I've got a fat tire bike there this year.
Okay.
I've got one of the live auction items is one of those big green egg smokers.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll be filled with...
Who's donating that?
I am.
You are. Who's donating the fat tire bicycle?
I am.
And what's going to be in the Green Acre?
It's going to be filled with Montana liquor, Montana-made liquor. Anywhere
who needs barbecue,
it's so
right?
much fun.
anywhere from 20 to 25
generous.
Bottles.
Wow.
So real quickly, so marrying your love of creative writing, all the proceeds from the evening go to the creative writing program, right?
It does.
Two scholarships. They're funding
It's actually three scholarships.
Ah, three.
It actually helps to bring in... people within the industry, authors, editors, publishers, to meet the students.
I see.
And
okay.
So there's a reach out that way. So how can I get to?
So the scholarships don't go to the students. They fund bringing in writers and publishers.
Writers and publishers, and there's other incidentals that they might need.
I see.
One of the things that we also did is a printing press. From a man who was born here in Missoula in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. He's 80 years old now. His name's Peter Koch. He taught book arts and how to create books that are actually works of art. Not art
wow.
books, but books that are works of art. And he taught for 35 years in at Berkeley. And so... When the Lost Journals of Sacagawea first came out, Deborah Erling's masterpiece, when that first came out, there was only 60 copies. And the books that they did were bound in bison hide. They had Indian beads on them, calligraphy. So these things are actual works of art.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they went for $3,000. And
wow.
so he... retired, and he sold us what he considered his gem of all of the printing presses that he had. And so we've got that now. So there's a new book arts program that just started last year. And they created all sorts of cool little things, not anything that – you know, we've really seen
sure.
yet, except for within the university community and within the friends of the students and stuff. But we're going to see some of those works at the Opus this year.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Just like with music, there's a retro period going back to, you know, vinyl. I think in books you're going to see the same thing. People are going to get tired of audiobooks. They're going to get tired of Kindle reading, and they're going to want to have the actual pages in their hands.
Well, these books, the thing about Peter, what Peter did was he actually brought artists together to create this. So you had mm-hmm. Bookbinders, calligraphers, photographers,
sure.
Paper making artists brought all of these folks together to create these things. And it's kind of like the way printing was done in the 1600s.
Sure.
And he was actually commissioned by the city of Venice in Italy to come in and recreate a book from the 1600s.
Mm-hmm.
So he brought some students with him, and then he commissioned local artisans to come in. And they recreated this. But he did something different, too. In Venice, the buildings are made of brick, but because of the sea and the salt air, the brick kind of dissolves and it falls off the building into little drifts at
right.
the base of the building. So what the Venetians have done over the years is they get the brick powder back together and they mix it up with
mm-hmm.
cement and put it back up in the walls. Well,
right.
what he did, a little bit different, was take some of that brick and put it into the covers of the the different books.
That's
neat. So, and the thing about this guy, he's really interesting.
It's art.
I mean, besides that he's just a genius in his own way, is that his father died when he was a baby in Normandy. on D-Day.
Hey.
But his grandfather was the first forester here in the area, and he taught at the University of Montana and brought Norman McLean's father into Missoula as a pastor to open his own church here. And Norman McLean actually taught Peter how to fly fish.
That's amazing. That's a really cool story.
And so it's just an interesting guy, wonderful person.
The history of Missoula, right, can be found in the bars and taverns that line downtown, the downtown streets. It's where all the stories come from. Let's do a little selling. The writer's opus, right, is Friday, October
18th.
18th from 6 to 9.
Okay. 6 to about 9:30 or 10.
Yeah, 10.
Okay, it might go a little bit longer.
At the Florence Hotel, you can go to writersopus.com for more information.
You can. The money would go to the University of Montana Foundation.
Right.
And so, we'll raise tens of thousands of dollars.
Can people come
right
into the Rhino and get tickets? Or
The night of the event they could come, or they can buy ahead of time. The thing is that it's limited to 150 people.
That's what I was going to ask you. What's the capacity?
It's 150 people. We're selling 10
tables,
and that's 8 people per table, and then there'll be other tables, so that's 80 people, so there's only another 70 tickets that we'll be able to do for this.
Hurry, get them right now, right, or else you won't be able to get into this.
Let's take a quick break. Our guest is Kevin Head from the Rhino and the Writer's Opus, back after these words.
We are back with Kevin Head of the Rhino. Scott, you had a closing question for him.
Well, I'm from back east. Arnie, you're from back east. Kevin is from back east. And I'm curious, what did your family think when you moved out here in 1977? Did they come and visit? Have they been out here?
My youngest brother, Jesse, lives out here.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, he lives here in town. And I had another brother who passed away earlier this year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And a sister who lives in Connecticut, and another sister who passed away a while ago. So five kids, Catholic family. We probably weren't doing as well as other Catholic families, but we did okay.
We tried to keep up.
My mom was a model, and my dad, a good-looking guy, one-quarter Cherokee, and it's funny, with them, for me, I ended up with a face for radio.
Right. So that's not true. Kevin always has a smile on his face. Always has a warm embrace when I see him. Kevin's the real deal.
Yes, I
saw you at Costco, and I said we got to
air.
Yeah. It's always the same thing. They always pick up where I left off with Kevin. But anyway, did they come out? Your brother's out here.
My sister has yet to be out here. She wants to come out, but she's helping raise grandkids right now.
That's nice.
And her husband, who's retired pilot. Live in Connecticut.
Right.
My brother Sean has been out a couple of times, and we actually went on the Smith River together.
Nice. Wonderful.
Now, have you gone back to Westchester County since?
I went back for my 40th reunion.
He's a Giant fan.
My 50th was this year, and I didn't go. But I did go for my 40th, and I was glad I did. I saw people that I wanted to see. But for me, it was kind of closure.
Right.
I went back, and I saw some of my folks. I really don't have much in the way of family there. Yeah. My sister's in Connecticut. My brother Jesse's here. My parents are both gone. Yeah. And so home.
Did your folks think you were crazy for moving out here?
Yeah, I think, although they always knew I was the kind of kid that, was out in the ponds getting snapping turtles and painted turtles and frogs and salamanders and snakes and all that kind of stuff. That was me. And so I always, had a thing for the outdoors and loved it. Hadn't been out here yet. But, boy, I was sure glad when I did make it out here.
It's the common thread that brings us all together. Anybody that I've ever met that moved out to Montana is the little bit of that person that thinks differently.
Sure.
And they made this their home.
Yep.
And I'm glad we did. And I'm glad that you've been a guest on our show.
Oh, thank you. I had a blast.
Kevin, it was our pleasure having you here.
Don't forget, Writer's Opus, Friday night, October 18th at the Florence Hotel from 6 o'clock on. Tastings of amazing spirits, bourbons, et cetera, so forth, food, as well as a silent auction, all to raise money for the creative writing program.
So there'll probably be 50 whiskeys there.
50?
Nice.
50 whiskeys, including single malts. So if you're into fine scotch, which is where I cut my teeth when it comes to whiskey,
right,
then there are going to be some great ones there. And great food and wonderful wine.
And with that, Scott...
Right, Arnie. This has been a great event. See you next Sunday.
Yeah, making me hungry.
I know.
Take care.
Okay, see you next Sunday.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO,